Welcome to the Shooting Bench. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you commentary and important updates on current events, as well as information on guns, training, preparedness, and other liberty-related issues. Let's get started. RAT, right now. All right, here we are. Welcome to the Shooting Bench, Thursday night, the last day of March 2016. A quarter of this year has expired, been expended, gone away, never to come back. Unbelievable. Anyway, here we are. Got a few things to talk about. Got a lot of things going on here. Trying to exercise my power of multitasking as I'm doing all this. Alright, that's one problem solved. Let that go for now. Let's move on. You know, the hard thing about taking off immediately after Amy sometimes is getting everything closed out and recorders changed and all of that stuff, and then getting this one going smoothly. And with an aging computer, it becomes more and more difficult. You know, that's what we ought to do. We ought to go out and win the lottery, Amy. We ought to go do that tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And what is tomorrow? Yeah, tomorrow's Friday. Why don't we just go out and win the Powerball, and we'll get us both a new computer.
Okay. Good idea.
Yeah, I think that'll work. Because mine, right now, after I said that, now it's mad at me.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to my world.
And here we are. Yeah, Peanut Rider, we did hear about the group. It was 30 Middle Easterners. There was two groups of 15 shooting and hollering Aloha Snack Bar up at some campers and stuff out there.
What were they yelling?
Aloha Snack Bar.
Huh. Oh.
Yeah, that means shoot me, I'm a raghead.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's why my meager understanding of ISIS talk or whatever it is. But apparently nobody was injured. I don't know exactly what happened. I thought this was a satire type thing. I thought it was a site like The Onion or something like that. And I did some research. I found it on Breitbart. I found it on several other reputable news sources. So it was apparently it's true. And county sheriff stopped these guys and, I guess, questioned them and stuff and turned them loose. So, you know, we have no option here except to stereotype. I mean, that's just what we do. And was that a test? Were they seeing what response time was, checking on communications, they monitoring radio? What are they doing? There was 30 of them, two groups of 15. Now, that's just not your average. Since they were broken up into two equal groups, apparently they weren't playing paintball. They had real guns, shooting up in the air, as ragheads so frequently do. And, I don't know, that sounds a little strange to me. But Peanut Rider said it was on a Los Angeles CBS affiliate. Were they breaking laws? You know, that's a tough one, Longslide. Apparently, some of the guns that they had are illegal in California. And that's enough right there to hold them. Firing indiscriminately in the air and stuff is illegal. It's definitely illegal here in Arizona. You cannot do that. It falls under a law called, what was it, Megan's Law? Or not Megan's Law, that's... what was that little girl's name? Mm-hmm. Anyway.
I know what you're talking about.
Whatever it is, you can't do that here. Peanut Rider says it's a shotgun-only area, so these guys, according to the story, were not shooting shotguns. Or not exclusively, anyway. So, I don't know if they were drinking. I don't know what all was. But this is one of those difficult things. From a constitutional standpoint, if they weren't breaking any laws, you can't hold on to them just because they're apparently, obviously, Muslims. So this puts us in quite a bit of a sticky wicket here. When you see somebody, it's not against the law to holler Aloha Snack Bar either. When you find somebody walking around out in the woods carrying a shotgun, and he starts hollering that, well, what do you do? Just turn around and leave and let him see what he'll do? I don't know. Oh, well, we'll see what happens. That was an interesting deal. Man. Let me get my treasure chest of intensely interesting stories opened up here. My treasure chest key is rusty or something. It's not working very good. Oh, by the way, did anybody Anybody look at that story I told you about day before yesterday? Said I'd like to get an opinion on that. I still would. I was serious. I wanted you to listen to that or read that story and see what you could figure out of it. All right. This is a very interesting story considering everything that's going on in Oregon and Nevada and Utah and in Texas and Arizona and New Mexico and everywhere else. On January 12th of this year, there was a deputy regional forester that told people at a legislative briefing here in Arizona, told State Senator Sylvia Allen, who is a friend of ours, we know Sylvia fairly well, good gal, highly pro-Second Amendment. But this guy told us what the rest of us already knew. He said the federal government does not own the federally managed land within the borders of Arizona. Okay. He said about 100 years ago, the first chief of the Forest Service coined the phrase "the greatest good for the greatest number." And that phrase is still applicable today as we manage the national forest. We are trying to manage for the greatest good, for the greatest number, and that is not an easy task. It is a challenging one. Within the state of Arizona, we have 6 national forests, and they are represented by the forest supervisors and manager here. Let's see, Coconino, Kaibab, Prescott, Apache Sitgreaves, Tonto, and Coronado Forest. These forests represent some of the best landscapes within the state and are really prized possessions of the city of citizens of Arizona. Okay, well, we know all that. And apparently they know all that. So, I struggle with this. It's kind of a long story. But on down here a little ways, he said that he concluded with that, with the statement that said, "Contrary to what you may have heard lately about federal ownership of lands, the Forest Service does not own a single acre of land in Arizona. We don't own a single acre of any land in the United States." This coming from Deputy Regional Forester of the Southwest Region, Jim Upchurch. I don't know. I think this whole story here. I am going to go down here and read a little bit more of this. Okay, people in New Jersey, New York, California do not understand what it means to live off the land. As a result, they do not understand that to live off the land, one must conserve and protect it. In his book, Alligators in the Moat, Politics and the Mexican Border, Arizona rancher Ed Ashurst discusses the ravaging forest fires that have consumed rangelands in the Southwest and the federal government that allows it. He writes of the fires set by the Mexican cartel mules as they cross wide open border. On May 8, 2011, Border Patrol agents tracked 4 illegals to the Burrow Springs area, a short distance ahead of where the Border Patrol agents turned around. A fire had started and several Forest Service first responders were in the area with plans to attack the fire. Before the first Forest Service personnel or the Border Patrol agents got to the place where the fire originated, a short distance from Burrow Springs, the Forest Service employees and federal agents were given orders to evacuate. The fire would grow in stature and fame and would burn from the 8th of May until the 25th of June. The federal government would spend in excess of $50 million fighting it, and it would eventually burn 222,954 acres or 350 square miles. The fire would go down in history as the 5th largest wildfire in Arizona history and would become known as the Horseshoe No. 2. The origin of the fire was never officially investigated. The first responders were ordered to evacuate before they reached the exact location where the fire started. And that's a little odd. The Hammonds burned 140 acres and were incarcerated, their lives destroyed. The older one's probably going to die in there. The younger one might. The cartels burned almost 223,000 acres in that one fire. The rancher's reality is something no one can really understand. One rancher described finding one of his own cows tied to a tree out in the southern border and range. Because she was not free to graze, she died of starvation. He was torn up with the thought of the painful death. The cartels who tied her there did so to let the rancher know that his death would be painful should he ever make a misstep. So why aren't we spending money doing something with these cartels and instead of harassing these ranchers? This is it's embarrassing. It's unbelievable. That's what it is. Asser speaks for all ranchers in the area, and he writes, the U.S. Forest Service is managed, or should we say supposed to be managed, under the umbrella of the United States Department of Agriculture. The very name Department of Agriculture connotes a sustained effort to promote a viable plan or course of action to harvest a product off the land. Sadly, in 21st century America, in the case of the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management, nothing could be further from the truth. Greenlee County Supervisor Robert Corbell told his constituents after the Allen hearing that it is important to be there and be heard. I think that my being there for the people of Greenlee County and the state of Arizona was important. Well, no, if it was or not. Interesting stuff there. All right, let's... This will make some of you very angry. And it does me too. This is one of those things. It's kind of like the raghead thing a while ago. Only in as much not that the stories are related at all, but from a constitutional standpoint, it makes us mad if we're veterans, especially. But, you know, any patriot worth their salt, it makes us very angry when we see somebody desecrate the flag, whether it's burning it or putting it on the ground and stepping on it and, you know, whatever. From a constitutional standpoint, it's a piece of cloth. It's a flag. It means a lot to those of us that have served and those of us that feel like we're, you know, proud of our country and all that. And the same can be said for the Stolen Valor Act, which has since been shot down. It makes us mad when we've gone in, put a few years and a lot of us, blood and blood, sweat, and tears, and lives, and everything to get the medals and ribbons and stuff that we have. And then you find some retard out there from wherever that puts on all this stuff and acts like he's really been in the Army. does that hurt anything? It leads people to believe that so what? Where it starts hurting things is where they start getting discounts, financial gain, any type of benefit of any description because of their lies. Then there is something wrong with that. That's stealing just like any other theft. It's dishonest. But if they want to walk around in a uniform and play like they were Rambo or something, and obviously it makes some of us mad. It makes me mad. But is it anything that is worth risking your freedom over or anything? It's because it makes us mad and they do that. And then there's other things like maybe like the raghead thing a while ago. If they haven't broken any laws, Why do we care? Well, there's been about how many major terrorist attacks just in the United States or on United States interest in other countries that were 100% Muslims. I don't know. Anyway, there's a this story does make me mad. It's about the stolen valor thing. This guy's 66 years old. He had he was returning back to his home from a Veterans Day event in St. Louis when he was assaulted by a group of Marines, if you can believe that. The thing is, now I don't know if these Marines were. If these Marines were drunk or just what their problem was, but they started yelling at him. They said, "Your ribbons are crooked, you're a phony." Called him a fraud and accused him of impersonating a veteran, and then took a swipe at his Purple Hearts, which he got from a battle in Vietnam. From battle, not a battle. The Vietnam vet showed local news media a picture of an officer presenting one of the medals to him in a hospital bed, as well as the telegrams informing his parents that he'd been wounded in battle. This guy was beat up pretty good by Marines. It wasn't just an attack on his credibility. It wasn't only embarrassing and humiliating and infuriating. They actually injured him. He said, "I can't believe one veteran would do this to another." They were recording the whole thing while taunting him in front of a crowd of people. And he broke down in tears, and so I don't know. He showed the group, the Marines there, showed him his VA health card, but it didn't seem to make any difference. They were bound and determined that they were going to beat him up. And police finally intervened and made the group apologize, but they didn't do anything else to him. This was was sure enough an assault. And they should have been a lot more than that. So this has nothing to do, really, with the Stolen Valor Act. These are people that, strictly because of big egos and little, well, we won't go there, that they attack this guy. And that is I don't know, in my mind, that is a real problem. Well, let's see here. I think it's about break time. So let's move on over here real quick. And let's do this. And let's do this. Very good. Now you're talking. I'll be back in about 5 minutes. Maybe if this thing starts. There it goes.
Saw your picture on a poster in a cafe out in Phoenix. Guess you're still the sweetheart of the rodeo. As for me and little Casey, we still make the circuit in a one-horse trailer and still asks about you all the time. And I guess we never even cross your mind. But oh, sometimes I think about you and the way for me, I started asking questions, and there's certain things a man just doesn't know. Her birthday came and you never even called. I guess we never crossed your mind at all. But then sometimes I think about you and the way you used to ride out in your rhinestones and your sequins with the sunlight on your hair. And oh, the crowd will always love you, but as for me, I've come to know everything that glitters is not gold. Everybody said you'd make it big someday, and I guess that we were only in your way. But someday I'm sure you're gonna know the cost. 'Cause for everything you win, there's some. But oh, sometimes I think about you and the way you used to ride out in your rhinestones and your sequins with the sunlight on your hair. And oh, the crowd will always love you. As for me, I've come to know everything that glitters is not gold. Ooh, everything that glitters is not gold.
She's back! Miss Amy is back with an all-new Living Way Out Here on the Survival Circle Network. Join Amy for an uplifting hour of fun on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday evenings at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on Survival Circle. All right, let's get back to what we were doing here. We've got several other... Oh, well, I know what we need to talk about for just a minute. This was kind of interesting. There's a guy here that obviously he's got more money than he's got sense. Well, maybe not. So maybe he's got more money than me. Let's put it that way. He has spent some time here and built up a 375 Chi-Tac from Hill Country Rifles and has set the new long-distance record again. Actually, it's a team of guys. I shouldn't say a guy because there's several of them that were involved in this. 4,200... and 10 yards, 2.4 miles, 375 Chi-Tac Precision Rifle from Hill Country Rifles. Those guns only cost about $10,000, not counting scope and everything. and world record shot. It took several rounds to do it, obviously. I don't think people understand when you get out that far, the scope, if you're looking at it from the side, somebody that doesn't know anything about it would say, you know, that scope is all messed up. When you're shooting that far, you've got the back end of that scope raised enough that it looks like that it's pointing right at the muzzle of the gun. It doesn't look like, you know, with the average scope, there's a little bit of tilt there, but you don't really notice it. For the most part, you can set it in there level and get whatever adjustment you need out of it, out of the adjustments on the scope. But to shoot that far, even 1,000 yards, you've got to have, usually with most scopes, you've got to have different types of mounts so that you lift the rear end of that scope up considerably. And in 4,210 yards, it's got to be jacked up a lot. And that bullet was still going at that far, 2.4 miles. That bullet was still going over 1,000 feet a second. So you take a, I don't know what it was, 250, 350 grain bullet, whatever, at 1,000 feet a second, that's still pretty impressive. It's still going to do some damage when it gets there. And there's been out at, where is it there in, at the NRA Center in Raton, they've got gongs set out there at 3,800 yards, and they've got one out at 2.07 miles, and which is, what, 4,000 yards. So all of these guys are awesome to be able to make these shots at 2 miles. This guy just happened to break it by going almost a half a mile farther at 2.4 miles. Quite an impressive accomplishment there. There's been a few verified sniper shots way out past a mile with some of these same guns, with the 375, the 4, what's that other Shytac, 408 or something like that, 416. And it's just an amazing comment. It doesn't sound too much to people who don't know anything about shooting, but for people that have been out and tried long-range shooting, you know, things change a lot even at 500 yards. If you have your rifle sighted in for 200, and you all of a sudden you decide you need to shoot out at 500. First thing you need to do is figure out how far it is out there, because if you've got it zeroed at 200, and it is an average hunting rifle, 30-06, 270, 7mm Magnum, 308, 243, you know, anything along that speed, you're going to be somewhere in the vicinity of between 36 and 44, 46 inches low at 500 yards. Now, the tricky thing about that is it's falling so fast by that time. What do you suppose it is at 400 yards? Well, at 400 yards, you're only a couple of feet off. In that last 100 yards, it drops almost full 2 feet. And I'm just using rough numbers off the top of my head, but that's pretty close. So you get out to 600-800 yards, 1,000 yards. If you're off by, if your range estimation is off by 25 yards, by the time you get out that far, you're looking at a clean miss. Depending on what you're shooting at, of course. If you're shooting at a school bus, well, maybe not. But if you're shooting at an average, you know, a minute of angle size target, well, then you can expect to miss it cleanly. But anyway, I thought that was pretty interesting. Yakima Glock says, 120 MOA scope bound. Actually, I think I looked in another article, and I think they said that it was 175 or 185 MOA scope mount. I mean, it was picked way up there. All right, that's hang on just a minute. Dang, that hurt. All right, let's move on here. I'll put this link in there. It's a real short story, but you can do a little searching around. You can find more stuff on it. But I'll throw it in the chat room for you, just for you shooters to look at here. Where is everybody at tonight, anyway? Look at the chat room there. We got 14 people in. What the hell's up with that? Wow. What's Long Slide talking about here? Something about being useless and... Yeah, sorry for the delay. I was reading some of the things. I wasn't paying attention to what I was doing here. Yeah, scope mount on that. Yeah, I was looking at it, and it was so dramatic from front to rear that it looks like the pictures that you draw when you're trying to show somebody how that works. You know, you're looking at line of sight and light of bore line of sight and bullet travel, and you put this on there and you draw the scope way out of proportion so that people can see what it's doing. Well, that's what this actual picture looked like. It was way off, but anyway. All right, Long Slide said something here, and I'm not sure what he's talking about. Useless but fun to shoot. And it may be just the distance there that you're talking about. And I thought about that. That's one of the things that I have to get through people's head in our stand by just one second. I had to get Amy to bring me some water. I'm choking here. Thank you. All right, let's try that again. That's something we have to get through people's head on the designated rifleman class, because they've got it in their head that somehow or another they're going to have to learn how to shoot at 1,000 yards, 1,200 yards or whatever. And this becomes more of a recreational thing. It's fun. Ding! At 1,000 yards. I did it! Well, you know, do we want to do this for recreation and just for fun? Or can we apply this in a reality-based scenario where you actually need to shoot that far? Now, the chances, let's go to that kind of a risk versus reward thing here. Okay, Longslide, I see. We'll talk about that in just a minute. Chances of any of us needing to shoot at 1,000 yards at any time, no matter how poopy the fan gets, are exceedingly slim. Because it's going to be difficult for us, unless it's a bunch of UN troops or somebody obviously well marked, and you happen to have the type of scope and gun that you need to shoot that far. One thing that we have to do is be able to identify those targets. One thing we don't have the luxury of doing is making mistakes that somebody else pays for. We have our own moral compass that we have to try to keep pointing in the right direction here, and taking 1,000-yard shots at somebody that might be an enemy is not acceptable. But 500 yards, now that's 500 or 600, now that's a little more doable, that's a little more reasonable. And that's what the designated rifleman's class is all about, is that you can take that battle rifle or something, just a tiny step up from a battle rifle that is not a sniper rifle, and be efficient with it out to 500 yards and still be able to use it at 25 yards, you know, 100 yards. So we have to convince people that to get away from the sexual organ comparison contest there before we can get everybody on board with that class. But let's go back to what Longslide was talking about, pistol caliber carbines. You made a statement up there earlier that said kind of useless but fun to shoot. I don't think they're useless at all. If you're in an urban environment, if you're spending more time in office buildings and apartment complexes and shopping centers and stuff like that, even in a full on poop hit the fan situation, man, you couldn't do any better than a pistol caliber carbine for 99% of what we would need one for. And to be able to have a carbine that used the same magazines as your handgun is another plus. And it's the same caliber as the handgun you're carrying is another plus. So how much better could it get? Now, I've already proven, we talked just a little bit about this, I think last night or night before, about shooting everything from 22s to 40s, 9mm, out to 10mm, out to 500 yards. So inside of 250 yards, I'd say that pistol caliber carbine is plenty useful. Maybe not against vehicles, maybe not against barriers, maybe not against the most armored fighters out there. But for 99% of what you're going to do, it's a great choice. High capacity, low recoil, noise is a lot less than your 223s and 308, 7.62 with 39. So that if you're firing inside buildings and stuff, then it's not nearly as devastating as some of your rifle calibers. So I don't think that it's a bad thing at all to have that. And this goes back to cowboy days, of course, when the guys had their 44-40 handguns and a little lever-action 44-40 rifle to go with it. Oddly enough, and I've never understood this, I've mentioned this before, I don't know why in the world there was no such thing as a 45 Colt rifle until I think it was the late 70s or 80s. Maybe a couple of custom modified jobs, but there was no production 45 Colt rifle, 45 Long Colt as some people like to call it. That to go with their 45 Colt revolvers. Never understood that. And I still have no earthly idea. I have no clue. The 357 Magnum and the 44 Magnum. And possibly even the 41 Magnum. I don't remember. Came out in a lever action rifle before the 45 Colt did. I don't get it. But anyway, go back to cowboy days. What better deal was it when half the cowboys out there were carrying the same caliber? And you find what you looking for?
There's a picture that Marty drew for me.
All that stuff right there, the book where the crayons are. So when you're traveling light, which kind of a survival type thing, kind of like what we have to look forward to, what we kind of expect, is you've got two guns, You can't just run down to Walmart every time you run out of ammo for one or the other. So why not be able to, good night, Lima. Why not carry something that shoots the same type of ammo? And so the same thing that worked well for the Cowboys in 1880, I think is going to work pretty well for us in 2016, 2020, whatever. Sometime here, probably in the not too distant future. That's right, Doc. That's why I stated it that way. Anyway, I think that's all. As far as just another real quick thing on pistol caliber carbines, there's hang on a minute. Goodness. Pistol caliber carbines, there's 22s, 22 magnums to go along with revolvers or semi-automatic pistols. The 357 Magnum lever action carbine, that's a pistol caliber carbine, a revolver caliber carbine. And it's what a great combination that is. You've got a good, powerful handgun that'll take almost anything in North America. Actually, it will. But when the 357 first came out, Dan Wesson, or Colonel Wesson's son, shot a moose with a 8.5 inch or 8 3/8 inch, whatever it was, Model 27 in 357 Magnum. And so it can be done cleanly. It's just a matter of sportsmanship and marksmanship. But the 44 Magnum, wow, that is an amazing lever action. As a matter of fact, I've got one out there in the gun rack of my truck right now. It's a little Marlin. Great little gun. Accurate, handles well. There's not a rifle or carbine of any description or action type out there, as far as I'm concerned, that is so well balanced and so easy to carry than a lever action. I'm very partial to the Marlins myself. Some people like the Winchesters better. I don't like the Winchesters at all. But, yeah, Doc, isn't that... You know, there are so many experts on YouTube. That's a fact. Colin, and these guys are trying to pass themselves off as somebody that actually knows something. And they're calling magazines clips and cartridges bullets, and even I've seen them even call empty cases bullets. I expect that from Southern California school teachers and whatnot, but it is amazing to me. Let's see, C7 got everyone listening to Gunsmoke better than the crappy rap these idiots listen to plus 70. All right, good deal. C7, glad you popped in here tonight. We're kind of thin in the chat room for some reason. I don't know what's going on. All right, well, I think I'm gonna ease on out of here and got things to do, places to go, and people to see. And you know, Doc, I had one of the little shorty 30-30s. Little what is it? They call it a compact, I think, 336 compact, I don't remember, but it was real short, 16.5 inch barrel, and that was the neatest gun, brand new. I loved it, and I let some guy con me out of it for way, way too little money. He's a friend of mine, and I should never have sold it. I hate my life for selling that gun more than anything in the world, but it's over now, so I'll have to find me another one of these days. All right, well, I'm going to sneak on out of here, and we'll see you all tomorrow for Liberty Lounge. Unless I get run over by a truck or something, I can assure you that Liberty Lounge will be happening tomorrow night. Amy will not be with us tomorrow night, so we'll see you then. Be sure and join us.
This has been The Shooting Bench. Hope Reynolds of Southwest Shooting Authority.